Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Ring the bell. We've done it again. Golden Oak Lending has lowered rates to 4.875 fixed. Lower your monthly payment, get cash out, pay off credit cards, and best of all, make no mortgage payments for 2 months. Lock in this incredible 4.875 rate and get your cash in as little as 14 days. Visit goldenoaklending.com today.
Golden Oak Lending, cured my blues.
5.81 APR, FHA, 15-year, 20% equity, qualified credit. Additional terms apply. NMLS 114937.
This is the Skate Podcast, talking Bruins hockey with WEEI Bruins writers Scott McLaughlin, Bridget Prue, and Brian DeFelice. Lace them up for some Bees talk. It's Odyssey's The Skate Pod on WEEI.
Woo!
Welcome into episode 434 of the Skate Podcast. I am Brian DeFelice, joined by Bridget Prue and Scott McLaughlin. Bridget and Scott were front and center today.
Yes, when, sorry for everyone who has had to see the back of our heads all mess in press conference on TV.
Did not realize the cameras were going to be that low, because usually the this setup for these press conferences, the Neely, Jacobs, and Sweeney are much higher.
Yeah, like at least 2 or 3 feet higher.
Yeah, and the cameras do not get any reporters in the shot, but if you were watching, you saw a lot of Bridget and I.
Yep, you saw my curly blonde hair. Good thing I did something nice with it today, I guess.
Same, yeah.
By a lot of people.
I was having a great hair day, so, you know.
Well, Scott, you say that, but I could tell from the back that you actually, did you recently get, did you shave recently?
Well, I shave every day, so yes.
Oh, okay. Right, well, I wasn't sure. Sometimes people let it go. I don't know. But what was funny to me was I
have let it go a few times since the season ended, because I'm like, I'm not going to anything today. Yeah. So
you look cleaned up from the backside. That's all I'm saying. But I sent you guys a video, and I was watching the stream probably a few minutes before they went live. And Bridget, you were just in the front chatting away with the people behind you. I don't know what you were talking about, but it was nonstop for like 10 minutes. And then the Three Stooges kind of walked onto the stage, and then you just got all proper and got your question ready. But
it was actually a serious conversation, so I didn't have any idea that this was like people could just see me have, no one could hear it. But
yeah.
Anyway, well, lots should, to get into.
I should say the press conference that was Charlie Jacobs, Cam Neely, and Don Sweeney addressing Bruins media, and you guys were front and center. Now, I will say, Bridget and Scott, there were moments where the tension was so high you could cut it with a butter knife. It was quite awkward at times. Kind of loved it. I wish I had some popcorn like Scott has every game, but let's just
You had popcorn for that. You didn't see it?
What's that?
You didn't see him eating popcorn during that?
No, I didn't. Good for you, Scott, right? That gotta love that. But you guys were obviously there in person. You got the vibes of the room. You got to ask some questions yourselves. And Scott, why don't we throw it to you first and take it away with the opening shift?
Yeah, so it started with opening comments from each of them, and Charlie Jacobs went first. And I thought Charlie Jacobs was setting a tone for the day that turned out to be different than what the next 50-plus minutes turned into. Because you had Charlie Jacobs saying, addressing fans, saying, "I share your disappointment and frankly embarrassment on how poorly things played out over the course of the season, and I cannot thank you enough for your continued support." He said, "We embrace your criticism because it's well-deserved, and I want you to know it fuels myself and it fuels the two gentlemen to my left," referencing Don Sweeney and Cam Neely. He goes on to say, "Today is a time to look forward, to hold ourselves to a higher standard. And I believe strongly that we can bring a Stanley Cup back here to Boston. I feel we're in a great position to do so. And I invite our incredible and loyal fans to come along on the ride with us, because together we can do this." And I thought, okay, there's some word salad in there, but pretty interesting. Like, that sounds like someone who recognizes that fans are pissed off. Maybe that they're even pissed off at his own comments to the Boston Globe last week. And seemed to have a little bit of a different tone. And that tone just did not hold up over the rest of the press conference. Because as we're going to get into, you ended up with Cam Neely getting combative with Kevin Paul DuPont about drafting and developing. And bringing up, going all this back, bringing up 2015, which Dupes didn't even bring up himself in the question. You get Don Sweeney and Charlie Jacobs both getting defensive over their track record of hiring and or firing coaches and trying to explain why, you know, why they haven't made mistakes there or why, you know, it's been basically why coaches have been held accountable in a different way than the president and general manager. And you just kind of get all these, it just turned into a very defensive day is how I would say it ultimately came across. It was not an apologetic day or a humbling day or anything like that. Like it was a lot of defending track records and defending resumes and not so much talking about like what we're going to do going forward and how we're going to get back to the Stanley Cup that Charlie Jacobs opened talking about. And I don't know how they weren't prepared. It seems like they weren't prepared for some of the questions. And didn't seem to have like a clear message that they wanted to get back to other than just defending themselves. And there's been a lot of negative fan reaction and I get it. Cause I don't think that was really the tone or the message that fans wanted to hear today.
And I think that what you referenced, the opening statement from Charlie Jacobs was the only prepared statement. Like he was reading that off. It was 2 pages long. I was watching him. He was reading off of it. Nothing else from the entire press conference was in any way scripted. So,
yeah, like I mean, Cam and Don had opening statements, but they weren't written.
They didn't read off anything. Yeah. They had, you know, thought about it, but they didn't read anything like set in stone. And I do feel like maybe that was the scripted part of it. And which is totally fine. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing at all. Like if you want to get a point across, sometimes it's the best way to do it. But maybe that was the tone, the message that they intended to strike. But at some point in time, early on, it kind of just got away from that. But yeah, Brian, you go ahead with your opening shift.
Okay. Well, I definitely want to jump back to Scott's afterwards because there, I have a lot of thoughts on those opening statements and some comments that Charlie Jacobs made regarding the guys to his left and their job security going forward and his confidence in them. But yeah, I'll keep it. There's a lot of drama. There's a lot of in the weeds things we'll discuss today. And certainly Bruins fans have a lot of feelings about this current regime and the direction of the team and all of that. But at the end of the day, my biggest takeaway was, okay, through all the BS, what's the plan going forward? And Steve Conroy of the Boston Herald asked how long they feel that this retool turnaround is anticipated to be. A year, a couple of years, rebuild, whatever. Essentially, it took a few minutes to get to the actual answer, but essentially the sentiment among Neely, Sweeney, and even Charlie Jacobs is that they feel that with a healthy roster, and that means a full year of Hampus Lindholm, Charlie McAvoy, with some bounce back years for some key players, Jeremy Swayman for one, Elias Lindholm for another. Now, they didn't necessarily come out and say those last two names specifically, but this is just the between the lines that I'm picking up.
Better health. They did in response to some other questions.
Yeah.
They talked about both of them, so.
Yeah, they called it the goalie not-so-excellence department at one point.
Yeah, so I'll just summarize in general what they're feeling, which is better health, the bounce back performances and some significant additions to this lineup, especially at the wing, whether that's through trade or free agency, and they think that they'll be back in the mix as soon as next year. So here we are in April, and what's Don Sweeney going to say in April? We're going to go out and try to acquire Mitch Marner, or they don't know because they're not there yet, but that's their plan. They don't feel like this is going to be a multiple year turnaround. They think it's going to be a turnaround as soon as next year, and that they acknowledge that the playoffs is not the goal. The goal is a Stanley Cup, obviously, but that it starts with the playoffs, and by doing the right things and putting yourself in a position to succeed, you'll have that good karma that Scott kind of talks about a lot, which is just put your best foot forward. Teams will be attracted to a team if they're on the rise. So the Bruins are anticipating this time next year playing meaningful hockey. Their words, not mine. Whether or not that happens, I don't know. But that's my takeaway. Guys, through all the BS, what's your plan? And essentially, that's their plan. They can't give us names or specifics because it's only April. It's going to happen over the summer, but they plan on being back next year.
Yeah. And we'll get into as well some of the – there was some news about RFAs, UFAs that we can get into, in particular Morgan Geeky. And that will factor into the offseason, what they can add, how much cap space they have and whatnot. My opening shift has to do with – Jeremy Swayman and the comments about the goalie tandem in general. So early on in the press conference, Sweeney and Neely were asked about Swayman's performance. And basically he said Swayman categorically denied that the extra workload was part of it. And
Sweeney said that, right?
Yes, Sweeney. Sorry, maybe I didn't say that correctly. But it was Sweeney. And he said, basically, without reading the whole quote, that there were opportunities to get Korpisalo in that they kind of regret not putting him in there more because they would have liked to see more goalie competition, and they think that maybe that would have been the solution to getting Swayman back on track. The route that they went was putting him back in the fire and thinking that that will give him the opportunity to rebound, get himself set, maybe get some confidence if he could get anything rolling, but that's really not what ended up happening. So basically, I think when we went from the beginning of the season press conference this year, where it was, well, Swayman's the guy, he's going to get a majority of starts, I just feel like the tone changed. And now it's not Swayman has this automatic allotted, expected amount of games. He's going to get much more. This year was 70-30 in terms of starts. Swayman got 70%. It just doesn't feel like that's the tone anymore, and that they're going to go back to this. What they were doing when it was Ullmark and Swayman, which was, if someone's not stealing the job, you give the other guy a chance. If they're playing well, then you give them another opportunity. You reward them. So back to kind of that more reward system of getting the net, which creates more competition. Sounds like I think that's a difference from what the philosophy was this year heading into next year.
Yeah. I mean, the not so subtle message there is, Jeremy, we don't think you earned all the playing time you got this year, and next year you're going to have to. Like, that's what they're saying. And it's kind of a bit of tough love. It's like, you're going to have to play a lot better if you're going to play 55 to 60 games next year. Otherwise, Korpisalo will get more starts. You know, Sweeney also referenced Korpisalo saying he, wants to play more, which, of course, like any backup goalie does. But, I'm still baffled as to why the plan never changed during the season, because I know we talked about it and Bridget and I both wrote about it multiple times throughout the season. Like, Swayman was struggling with third, fourth, fifth straight starts. There were definitely stretches where Korpisalo was out playing him. So why throughout the entire season did the plan remain, well, Swayman gets his starts no matter what? like that part of it's still absolutely baffling to me.
I mean, I think they were hoping that he would work his way through it. I think they were just hoping that the more reps he gets in the net, he's bound to break out at some point, and it just never happened.
Yeah. And so just to finish up the, you know, the comment, just because I think this part's important as well. Sweeney said, I discussed with Bob Asenza and Joe Sacco that we probably miss an opportunity to allow Korpisalo to have a little bit of the rope in the thick of it when he was playing well. That's sometimes the decision that, as Bob would say, the goalie excellence department. And then he said, the goalie not as excellent department this year. And he's been on the record of saying that. So basically saying that when they talked to Bob Asenza and Joe Sacco, collectively the group thought, just keep putting swimming back in there and hope he rebounds.
So if you guys don't mind, I want to circle back to Scott's opening shift. And I want to start there because I think there's – when so much is said and asked, it makes sense to start at the beginning. And Scott mentions the tone that the Bruins management took in this press conference. And while Charlie Jacobs' opening statement started off on the right foot, it started off like he sounded like they were about to take accountability and no pun intended, but ownership of the struggles this season. He called it embarrassing, unacceptable, all of these things. He apologized to the fans. They deserve better, all that. But then he proceeds to give his stamp of approval and endorsement that Cam Neely and Don Sweeney are the two people for the job to get this team back to where they want to be, which is a Stanley Cup champion. And if you feel that way, that's one thing. But I failed to see the merit when we're talking about a Bruins season that was atrocious. In your opening statement, do you really think that Bruins fans and media care about the fact that Don Sweeney is the GM of Four Nations Canadian team and that all-star team of Canadians won a four team tournament, or that he's the general manager of Hockey Canada for the Olympics? I get what he's doing, right? He's trying to say to the media and to the fans out there, hey, this guy is thought highly of in our industry. He called him an industry leader, right? So he's trying to prop him up, put him on a pedestal, say, you guys all hate this guy essentially, but he is really good at what he does. If you don't think so, well, clearly the industry does. But we don't need to hear that in that moment. It's got nothing to do with the Boston Bruins going forward. Oh, I'm so happy for Don that he took Team Canada and Four Nations to a Four Nations win with all the All-Stars. What does that have to do with optimizing Elias Lindholm next year on the Boston Bruins or getting help on the, it means nothing to anybody. So to even go there, it's just, I didn't like that. I don't like I think the kids call it glazing these days. The glazing of these players.
I don't even know.
Me neither, but essentially.
I try not to catch up. I'm just.
Essentially the ass kissing of his employees and telling everybody why they're so great. They're going to take a very pragmatic approach to how they're going to get back to winning, and cites that the Bruins have the highest winning percentage of, or at least tied for the highest winning percentage in the NHL under Don Sweeney's tenure. It's like, that's great. That's great. But again, that doesn't really help us detail what the future holds. And I just found that very, I don't know if it's condescending, but to start off by saying,
I didn't have a huge issue with it.
It's not really an issue. It's an observation of mine where you talk about how he glossed over just how bad the season was, and then was just very quick to say, but this is why they're right for the job. And it's like, okay, what does being a Team Canada GM have anything to do with helping the Bruins going forward? It's not an apples to apples comparison. So I just didn't like that. It doesn't give anybody any clarity.
I guess the only thing that I would say it does is let you know where his mind's at, because clearly that's part of his decision-making process as to not firing anyone, right? Like, clearly that made a difference to him. So, and you know, he kind of laid out what makes Sweeney valuable still in his mind. So, like, the fact that Sweeney is looked at, like, I think what he's trying to get at is, if you fire him, I'm not confident we're going to be able to hire someone better. It's kind of what I was getting.
And I totally get that, and I understand the justification, especially trying to get ahead of a decision. But what good did being the GM of Team Canada have for the Bruins this past season? You know what I mean? It just the two aren't correlated. So I guess what I'm saying is, like, we're very smart hockey fans in this city. Like, we don't need to. What good did that do for the Bruins this year?
It's the second time Charlie Jacobs has brought it up. Because he did over the winter too during the season. So yeah, clearly it's something he places value on, and you know, maybe it's something where it's like, it's his way of justifying, hey, do I like Don Sweeney just because he's been here and I like him personally? Like, is he actually great at his job? And it's like, this is something he looks at as like, oh yeah, other people also view him as being really good at his job. But to your point, like, that, yeah, like, I don't think the majority of Bruins fans really care about Don Sweeney's work with Hockey Canada. Like, it doesn't, it might matter in Charlie Jacobs' mind, and it might inform his decision-making, but it doesn't really register in Boston, where all people really care about is the Boston Bruins. Yeah, I do think, you know, part of today had to be, at least as it relates to Charlie Jacobs, like, why do you still have faith in Cam Neely and Don Sweeney? And I think he tried to make that case. He addressed it right off the top with his opening statement, because obviously he knew it was coming. You know, I just think, again, I just think across the board, it just turned so defensive, and there's just a lack of acknowledging past mistakes or explaining why they're the right guys moving forward. And Charlie Jacobs briefly touched on something at one point that I actually think all of them should have leaned into more, which is the process they went through from 2015 when Don Sweeney got hired until 2019 when they got to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. Like, lean into that. By the way, you can even acknowledge your mistakes. Be like, look, yeah, we made mistakes at the 2015 draft, and we didn't get everything right, and yet Don Sweeney still took us from out of the playoffs to a Stanley Cup Final in 4 years. Like, lean into that, because that's the process that we're expecting again. And then tell us why you've learned and will be better at drafting. You know, tell us why Don can do this again, why you're confident he can do it again. And instead, when 2015 gets brought up, it's Cam Neely bringing up out of the blue and blaming scouts for why they got that first round wrong. And it's like, that's not what people want to hear if you're going to turn the clock back 10 years during this press conference. Like, focus on the good stuff and focus on what you're going to learn from and be better at this time around. That might allow you to build it back up even quicker than 4 years this time. Like,
to quote them, build back better. Quote,
yes.
Really. Uh-huh. Quoting someone else.
The new phrase, the killer bees, build back better.
Yeah.
Guys, I feel like there's a disconnect and there's relationship damage right now between Bruins ownership and management and the fan base. Also, Bruins media, because Bruins media are the voice of the fan base. And I think that one of the reasons why today seems so tense and why some of your colleagues were very forthcoming in their questions and dare I say bold and not afraid to make things awkward, I think is in part not so much because of the decision making that's gone on in the Bruins front office, but as a front office, and we've touched on this in past years, but as a team, they're very aloof. They don't make themselves available very often outside of season opening, season ending pressers, or if there's a major personnel change or something of that nature, where they don't have. And listen, if you want to say to me, Brian, they don't owe any media publication or radio station or TV outlet any answers, or they don't owe the fans answers, you're free to have your opinion. But I do feel as though if the Bruins made themselves just a little bit more available on a regular basis to face questions from a media landscape that I think they try their best to avoid, and doing so, you would provide more transparency to your fan base out there. And I just think that they're so unavailable that when they do become available, the fan bases, their mouths are foaming at wanting answers because they very seldom hear from them. And as media, you guys and your colleagues, you're probably like, oh shit, we get to talk to the management stake, which for the second time in the last calendar year. I think the Bruins would probably be, I think they're making things worse for themselves. They're trying to keep themselves private. I think it's hurting their cause. I think being a little bit more transparent would probably help some of these uncomfortable press conferences going forward. It might help mitigate some nasty headlines. I think sometimes when there's a lack of playing ball, I think people get pissed off and resentful. I think that stems from fans. Fans are paying ticket prices. They're paying for merchandise. They're committing their time and energy to watch the product and invest in the product. And they never hear from the people that make the decisions, not frequently enough. And I think it bothers people. And I think if there was better communication, maybe, I'm not saying people would like their decisions, but at least they wouldn't always be mysteries.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. We don't get a lot of a chance to talk, especially to Charlie Jacobs. So that's why I think there were some questions to him that he wasn't a huge fan of, like raising the ticket prices by 4% after raising them 9% last year. And I don't know. I didn't like the answer.
Just a masterful question from Kevin Paul DuPont, whether he fully intended it to be this way or not. But like, he asked about the 4% raise in ticket prices, and then like pauses, and Charlie almost starts answering, and then Dupes is just like, on top of the 9% last year.
Like, it's almost like he was waiting for him to start and then just be like, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, like, don't forget this. But to me, as someone who like already has a hard time affording things, like when he was saying, oh, everything went up, it's like, okay, so life is just harder in every possible way. And so you're saying because life is harder, we're just going to make it harder, even more hard. You have to pay more for everything else. Now you have to pay more for this too. It's like, I found it to be frustrating just as someone who, you know, sees the rising cost of stuff and gets frustrated by it every day. It's like, it was a frustrating answer to me.
Is inflation specific to Boston? Is that only a Boston thing, guys? Am I missing something? Doesn't affect any other teams out there?
I saw a, and no, it's not. I'll answer that first. I saw a breakdown of the prices of everything to go to a game, and Boston was the most expensive for, like, it was like parking plus tickets plus like a cost of one beer and one hot dog, and Boston was the highest.
That's for every team, by the way. Like, that's Celtics, Red Sox, Patriots. Like, because we're such a sports diehard region, like, all these team owners, like, they know they've got us. Like, you know, until people stop going to games and stop buying stuff, there's no incentive not to raise ticket prices every
year.
And
they know, like, we love our beer, so they're like $18, $20. And they know we're beer snobs, so they really mark up the craft beer. But I wanted to get to this because this was a question Scott asked.
As long as they don't raise the price of my popcorn, that's...
Well, for us, it's free. Okay, sorry.
I'm gonna walk in next year, and it's going to be like, you're going to have to, like, put in a quarter to open up the door to get your popcorn.
Scott will be bringing a hammer, getting into it, breaking in. The question/answer I want to get to was something that Scott asked to Cam Neely about Sweeney being in the final year of his contract this upcoming season. Does he plan on giving him an extension rather than him being a lame duck GM throughout the season? And I'll read part of the answer. He said, "I'm still contemplating what the best course of action is. I really feel like Don has done a good job here for the most part. I'll figure it out in the near future, whether we're going to re-sign Don or not." So I don't know if you guys have a read on just the answer in general, how it was answered tone-wise, on if he does plan on extending him soon, or whether or not this will be a season that he has, it's a prove it season. Let's see how you get the draft picks. Let's see how you use the draft picks. Let's see what free agents you bring in. Let's see what the results are before we give you any extra years on your contract.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you have both Charlie Jacobs and Cam Neely saying at other points in the press conference, you know, how much they believe in Don Sweeney. So you would think then that Cam Neely would want to extend him, right? Which is why I asked the question, and you get a non-committal answer, which, again, I've pointed out before, like, Cam Neely's done this once before. He let Don Sweeney go through the 2021-22 season without an extension in place, and they didn't extend him until after the season, about a month and a half or 2 months before his contract was actually up. And in that case, yeah, there were clearly things that Neely even said it himself at the end of the season. Like, there were things that he wanted to see in terms of how the season went. So yeah, we don't know. Like, he may very well decide to extend him now. But deciding to let him go through the year without an extension is, I think, absolutely in play because he's already done it. So, and if that's what he chooses, then presumably it's because of exactly what you said. Like, there's things he wants to see happen during the season. Whether it's, hey, you got to nail this top 10 pick, and like, that kid, you know, not necessarily in the NHL, but wherever he's playing next year, has got to look like, he's got to look good, look like a player. You got to sign free agents who are going to make an impact. And maybe even some of the guys you signed last year need to bounce back. Like, it could be all that. The new coach has to be the right hire. Of course, that's a big one. Like, so yeah, maybe it does drag on and even go through the season again.
So I guess the question I have is, what's the benefit to giving him an extension prior to seeing how he handles this retool? And I'm sure there are pros and cons to having somebody as a lame duck GM, lame duck coach, but why reward somebody who just had a bottom five finish in the NHL before seeing if they can turn it around? Just because the team turned things around from 15 to 19, or call it 15 to, you know, 24, whatever. By the way, Sweeney inherited David Pastrnak as a player, and he's been the most important player throughout that stretch for the Bruins. So what's wrong with making Don Sweeney sweat out his future and having it hinge upon how good of a job he does? Isn't that how everybody has to work in this society, in this world? You perform and you keep your job, or you get a promotion. You don't get an extension in your job if you're not performing. It's a performance-based world that we live in for the most part. So what would the benefit be of extending him after a bottom five finish before we get to see if he can have this turnaround? If the Bruins are in a clear playoff spot in the later stages of next season, could I see Neely being premature and saying, okay, you got us back to the playoffs before we're technically back in the playoffs?
Here's an extension. Say in March or something.
Could I see something like that? Yeah. But why would they do something before then?
So the only thing I can think of, like a tangible potential effect of this, is if you don't extend Sweeney, and as this coaching search gets going, are there coaching candidates who look at this and go, wait a minute, the guy hiring me only has one season on his contract, and you know, maybe they sit down with Cam at some point as part of the search, and what if they just ask Cam, like, hey, if you decide to change the GM next year, does that mean I only get 1 year? Because presumably the new GM would want to have a say in who the coach is. So that would be the one detriment I can think of, is like, does it hurt their coaching search if candidates know the GM is only guaranteed one more year? Because that might mean they're only guaranteed 1 year.
I want to get to the coaching stuff next, but I did want to respond to what Brian just said about what's the benefit of... I feel like if I were in Neely's position, or I was, you know, in any position to oversee what happens next at the GM position, I would say it would certainly be predicated on what happens in this offseason and what the team looks like next year. Like, it feels crazy to me to give someone an extension without knowing that you're not going to just finish bottom five again. And just to see some evidence of where that this retool and quick turnaround is actually happening, and have more information. There just needs to be more information to base the decision off of, I think. However, I do find it contradictory that they're saying, or that they might not extend him during the season, but they're saying all these really nice things and saying, we really believe in him, he's one of the best, like industry best. And the sentiment that they've said outwardly goes against not giving him that contract extension. So I feel like if you go based off what they're saying, he's going to be extended. And when Cam Neely says, oh, I'll decide on it some point in the near future, and maybe this isn't what he meant, but in my brain, this is where it went. Like, if it's a near future decision, does that mean, you know, they're getting something done? Because if it's, is it a no decision? Like, because if it's a decision, it means you're doing something. If it's a no decision, like, I don't know why he would bring up near future, but anyhow,
can I just say one thing, Bridget, as well? Because just to be clear, I wouldn't be surprised if they give him an extension, just because I wouldn't be surprised at anything that the Bruins do. But an example is the New York Rangers just extended Chris Drury. And if you ask Rangers fans, I think they're pretty pissed off about how this year has unfolded. And there's been a lot of eyebrow-raising moments for the Rangers in Chris Drury's tenure. So, as well as some good, right? Sound familiar? But I guess that's just a reminder. I know it's not apples to apples, but it happens.
Yeah, in that case, like the biggest surprise or biggest kind of difference is you had players at the end of the season basically saying, like, what Chris Drury did affected us and ruined our season. Now, I think that's kind of soft on the players' part, honestly. Like, okay, you basically cut Barclay Goodrow, like waived him and forced Jacob Trouba to waive his no trade. Like, okay, those are kind of, those sort of like below the belt moves you don't generally see in the NHL. But, you know, like, it ruined your seat. Like, it was hard to recover from. It's like, guys, like, it's the NHL. Like, people, teams move on from guys. But in that case, it's like you had a clear confrontation between players and GM, and Rangers ownership decided to stick with the GM. You know, at least in Boston so far, we don't hear that. Like, in fact, you have the opposite, where you have guys speaking positively about Don Sweeney. So,
yeah, we mentioned it last podcast with Zadorov talking about it. Yeah. He brought it up on breakup day, and we talked about it when Marchand said he's one of the best GMs. He may have even called him the best GM. We've certainly not heard dissent from players. And of course, I feel like most of the time guys just stay out of it, but there have been times where they've gone out of the way to bring it up that they do think he's doing a good job. So it's worth noting.
Yeah. And that, and the Zadorov comments and is in line with about not wasting certain players' primes, and that the team's going to get, they're going to go out and add. And it's in line with what the Bruins have said. I mean, they talked about a clear need at wing and scoring help and help everywhere, but they talked about wing, and it just, everything just all the signs are pointing at the Bruins opening up the wallet for, you know, one of the higher sought after wings in free agency. But Bridget, did you have something else about the coaching? I mean, there was a comment Charlie Jacobs made when he was asked about the leash between a head coach in the NHL and a GM. And basically, Charlie Jacobs just said the shelf life of a head coach, and this is in reference to three head coaches being fired in Don Sweeney's tenure, but he basically cited how the nature of the beast in the NHL and in pro sports is that head coaching shelf lives are shorter because you only have so much time where essentially before players start to lose your messaging, blah, blah, blah. Whereas GMs, they're not in the locker room every day, and I think they're a little bit more distant. So I just think those interpersonal relationships, I don't think come to a head as much. But the way I read into that is, head coaches get relieved of their duties after a certain amount of failures, whether it's the regular season or even the playoffs, as we saw with Bruce Cassidy in Boston. GMs, I think, get relieved of their duties when you're not making the playoffs. They didn't come out and say that, but I just think that when you get to the playoffs, a lot of times I think ownership and presidents of hockey operations, they – for the most part, we'll say, well, the general manager got them to the playoffs, and it's on the coaches and players to really go as far as they can. Obviously, GMs are held accountable at the trade deadline as well to add. But I think when teams fall short in the playoffs, people look at the head coach, and there's more communication between coaches and players for the obvious reasons. Whereas GMs they're in their ivory tower, and there's a little bit less relationships there, I think, on a day-to-day basis. And I just think that that probably explains the nature of the beast that Charlie Jacobs spoke to, which we all agree exists. We've said that before. So this is not news to us. It's not news to fans. We all know that to be true. But beyond that ideology, there's not much more to explain away.
Yeah, a couple other things I thought were notable here. So Charlie Jacobs referenced Don Sweeney having his hand on the pulse of whether or not the players tune out the head coach. And I feel he's done a pretty good job of measuring that. It's the first time we've actually heard an acknowledgement from any of them that these coaches that they fired lost the room, because Don Sweeney has actually gone out of his way to say that hasn't happened. Like, he hasn't thrown coaches under the bus in that way, but Charlie Jacobs certainly did. And like, clearly that's coming from Sweeney and Neely. Like, Charlie Jacobs isn't hearing from players that Cassidy or Montgomery lost the room. Like, he's hearing that from Sweeney and Neely as to why they're moving on from a coach.
Yeah, it was always behind the scenes reports, you know, that that was the reason why, especially with Cassidy, that that was the reason why a move was made there. When it was, it was kind of shocking news at the time. They, you know, it wasn't necessarily expected for them to move on from him at that point in time. So there had been rumblings that he, at least certain players, had, you know, grown tired of the way that he gave out his messaging. And so, yeah, it was a little bit of a confirmation of that. There were so many things involving coaching that came up that I think are worth touching on.
Can I do the second thing I wanted to bring up here? This was another weird defensive moment, and this time it was Don Sweeney. When he said, I believe it was Tara Sullivan who asked, you know, did he worry about coaches potentially being hesitant to take the job because there's been turnover? And he says, well, I'll let you know if that happens. So, like, right off the bat, kind of sarcastic response. And then,
by the way, Scott, before you continue, that is Don Sweeney's tell that he's rattled, is he starts fumbling with stuff in front of him. And that
he gets sarcastic.
That poor piece of paper in front of him, Scott. Go back and watch that film. He takes it, he picks it up, he starts shuffling on, and then he puts it right back down. And anyway, I thought that was funny. He tends to do that. He got that way with some of the swim and stuff too.
Yeah, and then – so then he goes on, and I thought this was like sort of a weird distinction he was trying to make, where he said, well, I've only done one coaching search. When they fired Claude, they just elevated Bruce Cassidy, who went interim and then became the head coach. And I'm like, I don't know that distinction really matters. Like, you've still made three coaching changes, period. Like, whether the replacement came internally just as a promotion or there was a full coaching search, like, what matters is that there was a coaching change.
Yeah, exactly.
In my mind. So I just thought it was weird that, like, he got defensive about that. Because, like, again, honestly, it's like, you don't, if he said, like, outside of Jim Montgomery, we've generally given our coaches really, you know, long leashes, that would be accurate. Like, Claude Julien was here 10 years. Bruce Cassidy was here 5, which is still an eternity in NHL coaching years. And, you know, it's really only Montgomery who gets 2+ seasons and, you know, gets fired a year plus after a record-setting regular season. Like, that's the only one you can point to and be like, that was a pretty quick turnaround on that one. You know, like, the other ones, it's like, you can stand on business on the other ones. Like, you gave them time, you know? So, I don't know. But it was weird, like, how, yeah, like, the sarcasm, the pushback, trying to differentiate between coaching search and elevating from within, like, again, just felt like an unnecessary tone that just kind of didn't fit what I think people wanted to hear today.
Yeah, and that has to do with what I was going to bring up next, which was the coaching change with Montgomery and the lack of contract extension there. And he reiterated multiple times that an extension couldn't be reached from Monty's side. And we don't know what he was asking for, but
a lot.
Apparently a lot, right? And nothing was confirmed. No numbers are, and nor will Sweeney or Neely ever confirm what those are. But
I mean, I feel pretty confident saying a lot.
Yeah.
Like, he wanted to be one of the highest paid coaches in the league.
And so the Bruins gave him offers. He had multiple meetings with management, and they just could never agree on a deal. So the extension there was, and he mentioned something about, you know, if someone feels that they can get the fruit of the market or whatever, if you make it to, it was basically saying, he would have had to go elsewhere to get the money that he wanted. And that it was kind of insinuating, suggesting that it was an unreasonable amount. Otherwise, they would have gotten to the number and would have been, you know, he would have probably been extended. And then the other, in my mind, the most important, because it's the most forward-looking, is what the coaching search will look like and what coaching candidates' requirements would be. And this, I wasn't, the first like 5 or so minutes of questions were pretty much all about the coaching search. And then I followed up later, because this is a conversation we've had on this podcast a few times. Would you consider bringing in someone that had no NHL head coaching experience? And I think I even said like someone from college or the AHL. And I was interested with the answer because I felt like he ruled out somebody like David Carl, guys who had only been college coaches, because he said they have to have some taste of the NHL at some level, whether that be former assistant coach of the NHL or someone like Jay Pandolfo would qualify. He worked with the Providence Bruins organization, so he would still be someone I think.
Jay Pandolfo was a Bruins assistant for like 6 years.
So he is still one of those college coaches that would fit the bill. But certain guys who we had brought up before, Ben Barr, Nate Lehman, David Carl, those are guys that it sounded like he was ruling out. So maybe we don't have to go into those. It kind of ruled out guys we're going to be talking about. And he mentioned multiple times that he's got a list of people that are already available, but he's waiting on, certainly sounded like he was targeting and maybe had some front runners in mind, guys that are coaching right now in the playoffs.
Scott, April 23rd, 2025, the day Bridget asked a question that crushed my dreams and broke my heart. She asked Don Sweeney if NHL experience is required. He says, I think so. Kind of like what she just said. So I just, sitting here as one of the winningest JV hockey coaches in New Hampshire history, apparently am not good enough to be a candidate for Don Sweeney as the next Boston Bruins head coach. So my dreams are either crushed or they're on hold until Don Sweeney is no longer general manager of the Boston Bruins. But well, it was not a good day for me when I heard that answer.
Scott, when's your interview?
Well, so yeah, mine's come up in May. He didn't clarify if EA Sports NHL video game experience qualifies as NHL adjacent. Like, I think I'm still in the run.
I think they would hire Scott if it wasn't for the weirdest demand he wants in his contract. He doesn't want to be referred to as coach. Because of his love of popcorn, he wants to be referred to as the Colonel. And I just find that to be completely out of line. And Scott, to be honest, I wouldn't blame me for not hiring you on the spot.
I would settle for Poppy. They call
That's
me that.
Even weirder. Nobody's calling you that. I'll never call you that.
Scott McPoppin. You got a chance at Twitter handle to Scott McPoppin.
Not Pop Pop. If anyone's an Always Sunny fan, they will get Pop Pop.
Oh, yeah. Nope.
Was their grandfather who they found out was actually a Nazi?
Oh, nice. See, he always has these Always Sunny in Philadelphia references, and
it's my favorite show ever. So,
yep.
Sorry. Go ahead. Yeah. So,
go ahead.
So a couple things here. So first on Montgomery, just to quickly circle back, since I asked that question, and maybe I didn't quite ask it right, because what I was trying to ask was, like, basically, do you regret not making a call to move on from Montgomery before the season? And, like, I feel like that was a mistake. Like, this is why we've said it. Like, this is why you don't go into a season with a lame duck coach. And I feel like last season ends. You start talking to Montgomery about an extension. To me, it's like, give yourself a month or, I don't know, to mid-June or whenever. And make it clear, like, if we don't get an extension done, we're moving on. So if Montgomery's demands are, in your mind, outrageous, then to me, like, they should have just made the call then. Because if you're firing him in November, it means you already, like, weren't super committed to him. Like,
because
I mean,
because
it lasted a month into the season.
But I feel like it was because he wasn't super committed to being Boston. That's
which they should again, they should have sensed. Like, you should get that sense after the season.
I mean, remember, was it right after the coaching change, or was it there was a press conference Sweeney did in the middle of the season about we need to identify the people who want to be here. And I just don't necessarily feel that he was like, I need to be a Bruin, like somebody like say Bergeron or people who have a true respect for the Spoke B and the organization and the history. Like, I just feel like he never fit that, especially if the contract negotiations were so far apart. It's not like he want like it makes it seem like he's totally fine going wherever wants to pay him, rather than, you know, really wanting to be part of the organization.
Well, specifically, he wanted St. Louis. He wanted to go home, and it I think it seems totally fair to think or feel like he had that in his back pocket, and that probably affected how he approached this job.
Yeah, he probably also thought he could use it as leverage for a bigger contract. Like, oh, other teams will want me and I'll go to St. Louis. Like, if you're not going to... Yeah.
Which, again, is just a situation I think they should have sniffed out ahead of time and ripped the Band-Aid off in the off season and have a new coach in place, because they set themselves up for a messy start and a messy situation with Montgomery. And, like, Montgomery himself deserves blame for that, absolutely. But I think the Bruins do as well. Like, I think they went into a season with an unsettled coaching situation, and that's always going to be a dangerous recipe. And it was. It blew up in their face.
You want to know a coaching question that I wish by the way, I feel like there was so much not touched because we ran out of time. I think they could have gone on for another hour.
I mean, it was about an hour long.
Yeah,
too.
It was 54 minutes, I think. But it could have gone on for another hour, I swear, because there was so much that we didn't ask because we just didn't get to.
I think this was – I can't ever remember them having one of these that went over an hour, so this had to be just about the longest one that they've done. So, like, as much as we're going to all rip them, like, I will at least give them some credit for that. Like, they answered a lot of questions.
Yeah, I believe, like, it seemed like – they were going to call it off at 11:30. That's what happened. It was about an hour. But I would have liked to ask about Zdeno Chara and what his role is with the organization, because we saw him in the locker room after the final game of the season. He's hard to miss. And so he's around, and you know he's involved, but, like, maybe just ask what the defined role is, and will he be part of – you know, either identifying talent or, you know, developing talent or coaching in some way. We still don't know. That would have been something I would have liked to get an answer on.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Hopefully we'll get another opportunity to hear from them throughout the summer. And you can maybe ask that, Bridget, next time you're in front of them. I do want to mention a couple of questions we got before we sign off from some people. But before we do, one thing that kind of caught my ear and it made me think of a question that wasn't asked. And to be honest, it probably wouldn't have been answered well anyway, it would have been deflected. But I think it was Sweeney who mentioned how at the trade deadline, one of the motivations behind that was trying to establish their leadership group going forward. And I don't have the direct quote in front of me, but I found that piece to be interesting, considering the leadership that they traded away. And my question to you guys that wasn't really asked at the press conference was if the Bruins management had any insight to any potential locker room issues beyond just players being frustrated due to the results or lack thereof. I don't think they would have given any color. They probably would have kept us in the dark. But I just found that, again, I think it was Sweeney, and it was something about wanting to establish a leadership group going forward and surrounding them with the pieces necessary to win. And I just found that interesting considering the fact that they traded away leadership. And I'm not saying that the leadership that they traded away was a problem in the room, but there was speculation about how it wasn't all peachy in the locker room all season. Of course, losing will do that. But I wondered if there was something more beyond the common the shared frustration of just the results. But I guess we won't get that answer.
Oh, I highly doubt that would have been answered. Yeah. And even captaincy, like we didn't ask about captaincy. Maybe if we had more time, something to that effect of leadership or captaincy would have been brought up. I also don't feel like there would have been an answer to that. I would be surprised if they're like, yeah, Pastrnak's the captain. Like if they had said that today, I think that they're probably not going to remember when Marchand was named captain. That was in training camp the year after the off season, or when Bergeron retired in that off season and they named a new captain. My guess is they don't do it until training camp. Like, I don't know about the beginning of training camp, maybe the beginning of training camp, but we're still a ways away from them officially announcing it. So I don't think they would have told us that today.
Yeah, because players and the new coach are going to have a say. I don't know. Ultimately, like who has final say is kind of depends on the situation. My guess is there will be enough consensus between different levels, management, coach, players, to settle on a captain or not settle on a captain and decide to go in with either with no C or with a rotating C or something like that. But the stuff about like potential locker room issues, like it is a question worth asking, even if it doesn't get a response. But, you know, as we've said, like there was so much to cover after a season like this that, you know, even with going nearly an hour, there was stuff that was we just weren't going to be able to get to.
And please, before we get to those questions, Brian, really need, there's like the geeky stuff. I really at least just.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So this was the more like newsy rather than, because this is about a contract extension for Morgan Geeky. Certainly sounds like they're 100% in on it, trying to get it done. They said it was going to be one of the first things they got done this offseason, because once you know what you've paid him, you now know how much cap you have to spend, and then that informs what you're going to do in free agency. So he should, if he gets a deal done, expect it to be one of the earlier things that happens this offseason, and that they were already in talks with him, and that the goal would be to sign him longer term. So I followed up and asked, is there a specific goal in mind for term? And he would not give me an answer. But because I'm wondering, does that mean 5 years, 6 years? Like, well, how long is longer term? To me, that means at least 4 years, right? Don't you guys think it's four or more?
Yeah, I think almost like five or more.
Yeah.
Generally, when I hear longer term.
So,
which is kind of what we were guessing. Like,
sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, which is kind of like what we were guessing, right? I think on the last pod we said, you know, I said my guess would be like 5 to 6 years, 5 to 6 million. I will say, like, it's also, it's nice to have a plan that's going to be one of the first things you get done. But, you know, I'm sure they thought Jeremy Swayman was going to be one of the first things they got done last year. And that dragged on until just about opening night. You know, if you go sit down with Morgan Geeky's representatives, you know, his agent, and all of a sudden you're at the negotiating table and they go, we think he's a $7.5 million player. Well, now maybe that contract's not getting done so quick, because you're like, damn, we were going to start at five. Nah, shit, there's a pretty big gap here. Like, all it takes is starting at such different points for something you hope would be quick to turn into a longer term thing. So it's a nice idea, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be the first or or second thing done.
Yeah. And so I think the main takeaways from it were, now we have a little bit more information of what they want to do, but certainly Geeky will be in the future and they're hoping longer term future. So if you're wondering what the top line is going to look like next year, not only did he mention trying to get Geeky's deal done, he also mentioned Elias Lindholm playing well on the first line at the end of the season. And then that's the plan. The end of the season first line of Geeky, Elias Lindholm, and Pastrnak is probably what they start with next year. Sounds like that's pretty they seem to confirm that today.
What did you guys think of Sweeney singling out wingers as an area to improve and not mentioning center?
Marner.
Well, to Bridget's point, I think, and Maria in Watertown asked that a similar question as well. So the way I read that is that one of those positions, which is wing, has some high end options in free agency, and the other position, center, doesn't. That's the way I see that.
Yeah. It's Sweeney's way of priming people for the reality, as we've discussed, that they are most likely not finding a number one center this offseason.
Yeah.
That there is not one in free agency unless you want to sign, you know, John Tavares or Matt Duchene, who are both 35 plus, which, hey, maybe you do. If you think you're going to be back next year, maybe that is something you entertain. But that doesn't really fit the timeline of what we think they want to do.
And so, what I just said about him pretty much saying Elias Lindholm is starting out as your number one center is also kind of pointing to you're not looking for a number one center. Like you think that if that line plays like they did at the end of the season, then that's your top line and that's your top center.
Unless something presents itself to them that we and they aren't necessarily thinking of right now. I mean, again, So this actually leads into one of the questions that I wanted to get to from a listener of ours that had some questions stemming from the press conference. So this is David Martino, and he asked, what do you think happens if they can't/won't sign a guy like Marner or Ehlers because they deem the prices too high? I'll just add, or maybe the player doesn't choose Boston. Seems like without a big ticket UFA addition, there's little chance of a quick retool. So Bridget and Scott, they've said as much themselves. We've been speculating about it, and we were just now talking about it. This retool, it does depend on health. I'm talking about Hampus Lindholm and Charlie McAvoy specifically. It does rely on some bounce back performances, Jeremy Swayman, Elias Lindholm, some others. And it relies on some internal individuals seizing an opportunity. But it mainly depends on what David is asking about, what we just talked about. So what happens if they can't land a big winger in free agency? Because that does seem to be one of the things they're relying on.
Yeah, it's a great question. You can look at the trade route. They have a little more draft and prospect capital now after selling at the deadline. Obviously, you're not going to use that for like a one-year rental, but is there someone with term out there that's worth targeting? Like, that's not the preferred route. I think the Bruins would prefer to just pay money and hang on to that draft capital and have it to replenish their prospect pool or to use in trades at future deadlines. So that's not what they want to do. But yeah, if the free agency market falls apart because whatever, prices are crazy or guys re-sign and don't even get there, it is something you have to consider because you don't want to be the team that like all of a sudden overpays for the fourth or fifth best winger because that's the best that's left. So yeah, I guess we will give, you know, whoever, Brock Besser, $9 million, which scares me to death because I don't want to commit that to Brock Besser.
Yeah. You know, it's to me, and people, so one reporter asked a question that was trying to beat around the bush at like,
I won't say his name. I think I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, maybe you've seen him at like the people you've seen at Four Nations, did any of them, you know, make you think, oh, I could add them to our team? Which Mitch Marner is the main person that, like I said, beating around the bush to try to get at.
And Sam Bennett.
Specifically.
Yeah, and throw Sam Bennett in there.
Yes. Actually, I was thinking of the other reporter who was beating around the bush of talking about potentially holding up for some UFAs in 2026, which...
Oh, yeah.
That was a good question, and Sweeney essentially said, no, if someone's available in any year, we'll make the room for them if they want to be here. And like he says, all teams find a way to make the cap work if they really identify somebody. One last question.
Which is funny because like Sweeney, it was either that question or maybe it was the Hockey Canada one where he, you know, alludes to Connor McDavid as like the guy who scored the winning goal looks pretty good.
Yes, it was. It was the question I was mentioning.
Yeah, but I was thinking more like when he's talking about if there's a free agent who wants to play for you, like my mind goes to Jack Eichel.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Sweeney's right about that. Like if there's a star player available who wants to play for you, you do whatever you have to do to free up the money. Like if you have to dump Elias Lindholm and include a draft pick to get rid of his contract or eat some of like whatever it takes, you figure out a way. You don't go like, I guess we can't sign Jack Eichel because we just don't have the cap space. Like, nah. You move the cap space out. You do what you have to do.
Yeah. Which was what Mick was getting at with his question about waiting until another year. Because that we've already been talking about Jack Eichel as maybe wanting to come here or maybe being someone that has a lot of value or could be a huge factor, even strength in on the power play for the Bruins. And what we saw him do at Four Nations just confirmed to people in Boston that he's got this element to his game that the Bruins might be missing in terms of how he's able to move the puck and get the power play going and moving and just watch how smooth he is and good, how good of a skater. Like certainly people who are Bruins fans that went to Four Nations probably looked at him and said, I would like that guy on our team. And his contract's coming up, not this offseason, but the following.
So there's one final question I wanted to get to, and this actually kind of is related to one of the topics from the press conference we really haven't touched on. Scott briefly mentioned Neely going at Kevin Paul DuPont, but Corey on Twitter at 603 Sports asks us, do you find the negative reactions to this front office to be overblown? People can't let go of 2015, which Neely accurately stated was a poorly timed regime change, not making excuses, and they need to right the ship, but I'm fine giving them that chance.
I think it can be overblown at times. Like, I think the people who say this is the worst front office in the NHL, that's an exaggeration. That's hyperbole. Like, they are at worst a top half of the NHL front office, all things considered. Now, if you want to say they're below average drafting and developing, that's fine. But that's not the only thing that goes into running a hockey team. So some of it, for sure is overblown. But a lot of it's also deserved. And by the way, just because it jogged something I wanted to say, like mentioning Cam, this is now like the third or fourth time Cam Neely has talked about the 2015 draft and how it was a poorly timed GM change and all that. Like, he's got to stop with this. It honestly, like, it's crap. First off, if you're going to say that you hired the GM too late, then like, again, to like the earlier point, like take ownership of it and be like, I messed that up because that was you. You're the one who, if you think the GM got hired too late, that's you. You're the team president. That was your decision. But even on top of that, Do you guys know what job Don Sweeney held before he was named general manager of the Boston Bruins?
Assistant general manager.
Of?
The Boston Bruins, right?
Oh, really? Oh, so he? So you mean he was already on staff and was already involved in the process?
Like, I thought I was going crazy with my answer, Bridget. I thought I was
They act like he came in from the outside and had like a month to figure out everything that was going on in the organization. He was already there. Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah. They did make it sound like he was just trying to get up to speed, but he was as up to speed as anyone possibly could have been.
Well, and Neely also admitted like their faults as well. He mentions that they were trying to trade up to, maybe was it five, and it fell through and they were caught with their pants around their ankles. They didn't know what to do. How do you?
What if they were trying to take at five?
It was Hanifin.
No, Hanifin.
Yeah.
But Well, I was telling you guys earlier, it's just like the Zboril was ranked 12th in North American among North American skaters in the final central scouting ranking. The Bruins took him 13th. Okay, so he was ranked 12th. North American skaters, he went 13th. DeBrusk was ranked 19th, he went 14th. And then Senishin was ranked 38th, he went 15th. I just don't know if you're caught with your pants around your ankles, why are you reaching at 38? Why just take look at the list and just don't overthink it.
Well, we don't have to relive all, but like the other part no, that it's I only think caught them it's off only guard
really
is
brought it up today. That's why we're talking about it.
Yeah, like if we're gonna talk about rankings, like Matt Barzell and Kyle Connor were ranked top 10 or 11 everywhere. And all of a sudden we're still there at 14. And I think they also got caught off guard by like, maybe they didn't have their full scouting reports and homework on guys they didn't think were going to be there, which is just as bad of a mistake as reaching on guys that you had more of a report on. Like that the whole thing was a mess. And yes, they did completely fuck it up. Like that's those picks at least. Like second round, they got Brandon Carlo in the second round. That was nice. Like they actually recovered fairly well within that draft. But
by the way, he was ranked 25th among North American skaters that year, Brandon Carlo. So he actually fell.
Well, yeah, I mean that the NHL Central Scouting is always it's always tough to go by that because they don't combine North American and European. Yeah. So like 25th among North American, like what was that overall? Was it 32nd? Yeah. Was it 40th?
Is there a master list ever like released?
I mean, I use so actually Elite Prospects has a consolidated ranking.
Okay.
That good. I think they usually go to like 100 or so. And that combines like eight or 10 different experts or something.
But to Scott's point earlier, we're not talking about the 2015 draft today, and nobody else is talking about it. Well, I shouldn't say that. Other people probably are because they always do. But if
Neely didn't people talk about every day, it's been their entire lives thinking about the 2015 draft.
If Neely didn't bring it up today, we wouldn't be talking about it. Like, why do they have to go there? You know, I will say Kevin Paul DuPont was not expecting a question back breaking down his opinion, but. I'm sure there.
I thought we were going to get a live. I thought we were just going to get like a live podcast between Dupes and Neely.
It was one of the more awkward, if not the most awkward, part. And it was a tough question. It was, you know, why do you think that your prospect pool is at the bottom of the league? It's not a question that, you know, it's something people want to know, right? Like. Dupes asked a few questions that it felt like they were driven by the general conversation by fans, and that would be one of them.
Were you guys surprised that he asked the questions he did? Because didn't the Globe just have it was either Kevin Paul DuPont or McBride? Okay. Yeah. Because they just had a piece with Charlie giving some candid answers, and it kind of feels like those questions would I don't know. It was interesting timing to see the Globe coming at them after he just did a piece for them. But
I think there's an understanding of, hey, I'm doing my job, you're doing your job, even if we don't like each other, we at the end of the day can respect that this is something you have to ask or this is something you have to say. So
I think some of the questions caught them a little off guard, though, especially the one towards Jacobs, for sure.
And the one that...
Which, again, it's just surprising to me. Like, they had to have known there were going to be tough questions today. And
can you guys confirm something for me? Because the What Chaos crew picked up on this, and I picked up on it live. Was Neely snapping at one of the media members afterwards, being like, come with me? Or was like...
He wasn't snapping. So it was dupes. He called Kevin, like, he just pulled Kevin Paul Dupont off to the side after. It was not...
To say hello? How was your weekend?
Yeah, to say, do you want to go get lunch? You know.
Yeah, I did not... There was no, like, yelling or anything like that. No. I think it was, like, a legit conversation.
No. Yeah, I bet. Everybody else is like, ooh.
All right, yeah, it was, like, the, like... I think the What Chaos guys even put it this way. It was, like, the... principal like calling a student out into the hallway or something, and like, yeah, the whole rest of the class does that, like, ooh, you're in trouble.
Which I think it was probably just to be like, you know, explain from your side, I explain from it. I don't think that there's going to be any sort of long lasting effect of like tarnished relationships over it.
They're boxing in front of a sold out TD Garden May 15th.
Oh, yeah, okay. I think he probably went sea bass on him a little bit there.
People were like responding with sea bass memes.
Wasn't as crazy as Jeansgate.
I was like I'm yeah, right. I'm Jim Carrey in that scene, just like pointing at him like as Kim Neely comes up.
Yeah. we can laugh. All right, so end of the day, like, yeah, it was a bit of a shit show, no doubt about it. I think the lack of availability with this Bruins regime kind of opens the door for days like this. People have a ton of questions. There aren't a lot of opportunities to ask them. And of course, people are upset. They're emotional. So there's a lot of work to be done. And I guess we'll see how it plays out. We'll see if Sweeney gets extended, if the proof will be in the pudding, and there's a lot of work to be done. So again, we'll be following it all off season. It won't be a shortage of things to talk about, starting with the draft lottery and the draft and so on. So,
which we didn't get to ask about the draft,
right?
Ran out of time for that. There's only a little bit of like newsiness stuff that I wanted to say at the end here, which was about health. So off season surgeries, they said that pretty much everyone is good. And Pavel Zacha is getting treatment that does not require surgery. The one person that
he said Zacha had a small procedure,
but that wasn't surgery.
Yeah. So whatever that is.
Yeah. I have no idea what that means.
They banged his knee with a hammer.
Yeah. Well, cause it's a knee. Because they said it was he said at breakup day, he was battling a knee thing. So how do you address a knee without, I don't know, I guess there's a way. I'm not a doctor.
I'm just realizing this is totally unrelated. I shook someone's hand today, the head of Bruins PR. I shook his hand today, and I totally forgot that he was in a sling the last time I saw him. And he just did it. Like, he just was like, yeah.
Well, he was crying in silence. He didn't want to show us he was hurt.
Like, he was fine, but then I, like, remembered after. I was like, oh, my God, I think I just broke his arm because he had a sling.
Just they had to rush him out of there on a stretcher. Like, paramedics were up there.
Yeah. I was trying to be like, thanks for your help this year. It was his first year. And then I was just like, totally after the fact, I'm driving home and I'm like, oh.
Yeah. The handshake was one thing, but then when you started slapping him on the shoulder multiple times, like, see you later, bud.
So the one person that might need, besides the Bruins PR person, that might need surgery, minor surgery, is Johnny Beecher. Was the only update on anything with that. They said Lindholm should be good. Hampus Lindholm should be good to go as scheduled to start preseason on time and training camp and whatnot. So that was it for injury news. I felt like we should mention it because maybe people were thinking Johnny Beecher looked a little banged up, or maybe they, I don't know, just figured I'd give the
information. Very last news item, since you just made me think of it. If people care, six Bruins will be playing in the World Championships. David Pastrnak and Jacob Lauko for Czech Republic. Jeremy Swayman, Mason Lauri, and Andrew Peak for the U.S. And Elias Lindholm for Sweden.
Which, by the way, some guys get bumped as other players in the NHL get bumped out of the playoffs. So after this round, maybe they bring in different guys. The original guys sometimes are no longer needed. So these are the people who are starting there because
and that starts on May 9th, by the way. It's over in Sweden and Denmark. So they will probably be day games. So if you want to watch, they won't interfere with NHL playoff games.
Some Providence Bruins love, by the way. When does their playoff?
Tonight. They're playing as we're recording.
I thought so. Okay. So,
I saw that they are not off to a good start. So.
Oof. Okay. Well, there are some names to watch there, obviously, as well. So the Boston Bruins are obviously on the golf courses, but Providence Bruins are looking to win a Calder Cup. So that's something to keep an eye on as well. All right. That'll probably wrap up our episode today. Again, appreciate the questions and the feedback, and continue to filter them in. Listen, Bruins fans, we know many of you want Sweeney gone. We know you want them to do better at drafting and developing. That's great. I got that. If you guys have some genius ideas about how to get this team back to the Stanley Cup, back to the promised land, we are all ears because we are not all knowing. So I would love to hear if anybody has some master plans besides what we heard today from the management brass, because we all know fans know best. Fans know best. We have the passion, right? So, anyway, we love hearing it from you guys, and it's going to be a long summer, so keep it coming. You guys have anything else before we go?
No, I think I'm good.
All righty. All right. Thanks all for listening. We'll talk to you on Friday.